I'll be back. But so is fear. Here comes the cannon.
No, it ain't time for the Terminator yet. Go away. Oh, not you. Welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow, the definitive radio program on emerging science and nanotechnology. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In this half hour, we have Wade Adams fresh from Rice University. But first, on the set here is our fountain of youthless information.
Welcome to the fountain of youthless information. How can I help you?
Okay, O Spirit of the Fountain, what two-word term is defined as the lowest possible temperature?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
Oh, two-word term for the lowest possible temperature? Absolute zero.
If you have a question to submit to me, the Fountain of Youthless Information, submit your question at the website, promiseoftomorrow.biz.
Okay, we are back with us today an old friend, Wade Adams, who is the director of the Richard E. Smalley Institute of Nanoscience at Rice University. Wade, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Colonel. Happy to be here.
I ran into Sean O'Brien the other day, and he said that there's going to be a nice big reunion party down there for the 25th anniversary of the discovery of the Buckyball. And I presume that you're the organizer in this, so I wanted to call you up and find out more about it. Can you tell us what's going on?
Well, he is right. We're having a big reunion. What we're doing is celebrating the 25th anniversary of the discovery of the Buckyball. We're going to do it in October. The Buckyball was actually discovered in September during an 11-day period when Sean was a grad student, Jim Heath was a grad student, Rick Smalley and Bob Curl were chemistry professors at that point, and they had a visitor from England, Harry Croteau, now Sir Harry Croteau from the University of Sussex, and Harry brought over an interesting problem to work on having to do with the structure of long-chain carbon molecules in interstellar space. And along the way, they made some carbon clusters, which had very unusual spectra. And after 10 days of looking and studying and thinking, they had discovered that this was a new form of carbon in the shape of a soccer ball, a carbon-60 molecule. And they dubbed it Buckminster Fullerene after Bucky Fuller, who'd done the geodesic domes, which look a lot like the structure of a buckyball. They wrote a two-page paper to Nature before Croteau took back off for England and submitted it to Nature, and a decade later won the Nobel Prize. So we are bringing the team together, minus Rick Smalley, who unfortunately passed away 5 years ago now, almost four
yeah.
and a half years ago.
Yeah.
And in October, actually on 10-10-10, we're having a big fundraising gala, a big to-do at a local hotel downtown, the Hyatt. We're hoping to bring some of Houston's, Texas, and America's finest philanthropists in to celebrate with us, raise some money for the workings of the Smalley Institute to help us continue solving the world's problems through nanotechnology. Then we're going to have a big party on Monday night that's going to be open to the public, and that's the point when the American Chemical Society will bestow the honor of a National Chemical Historic Landmark on Space Science Building, where the work was done. One of the two landmarks they're declaring this year. So we'll join the likes of Scotch Tape and Kevlar and other great things that have been called historic landmarks by the American Chemical Society. And the big party will continue. The party really of having the Nobel team back and eight of the top nanocarbon scientists, researchers in the world from all over the world to come in and talk about the history of the Buckyball, what it's meant to science in the world, and then the future of carbon nanotechnology that the Buckyball discovery has spawned. That's a big mouthful, but obviously that week in October we're going to have a lot of scientific activities, a lot of fun cultural activities. We're going to extend into other areas of interest with nanotechnology, maybe into art and music, who knows. And then we're going to have a few other satellite symposia follow that on Tuesday afternoon. celebrating some of the other nano centers at Rice that we've spawned, including aerospace, the Contact Program across Texas, the Center for Biological and Environmental Nanotechnology, ending with a civic scientist event that the Baker Institute's running on Wednesday with Sir Harry Croteau and Bob Curl. That'll be a public lecture Wednesday night. And then we'll probably all go take a long vacation.
Wow, that's just an amazing amount of things that you're cramming into a few days down there in in October. And you say it's open to the public. Is there a charge then for admission, or what are you going to do?
Well, of course, the fundraiser, people are buying tables and seats for that on Sunday night. So that's really, you know, anybody that can afford to contribute to the Smalley Institute at Rice is welcome to get on our website and look that up and so forth. But the event on Monday morning and Tuesday will be open to the public, but it's going to be by RSVP, so we need to know how many are coming. We figure we'll fill the Shell Auditorium in the Jones Business School with the actual presentations and so forth on Monday morning and afternoon and Tuesday. But we are planning to webcast it and make it available in satellite rooms if we fill it up. That's a capacity of only 450. So the Monday night event is going to be a party with food and so forth, and the only thing we're doing there is asking for RSVPs with a minimal charge to help cover the food. That's encouraged people to be serious about their RSVPs.
Sure.
Something like 10 or 15 bucks a head, maybe, to cover some of the food costs. We have the thing that's enabling this, and let me just say that this is part of an entire year of celebration. We have declared this at Rice the year of nano. Self-declared, what the heck, it is a year. We've had a number of symposia, seminars, we've had interesting activities, we've celebrated the 10th anniversary of our carbon nanotube lab here, the HIPCO lab, high-pressure carbon monoxide that makes still the world's best carbon nanotubes. We are bringing back the Tuna Fest, a networking event on July 2nd at noon. That's open to the public. Any friend of Nano is a friend of ours, and we expect people to come from a number of places, even out of town, for that. It's a two-hour lunch. We're anticipating about 1,500 people there. It's tuna. Typically, I go catch the tuna off the Outer Banks of North Carolina, but we didn't actually make it this year, so it's all going to be catered. There's no charge for that. We are going to have some great door prizes, and you must RSVP on our website or through our Facebook page to indicate that you're coming and that you're entered for the door prizes. So that's just a fun event. It'll be hot, so it's shorts and sandals, and we give away free T-shirts of commemorative the 8th annual Tuna Fest. We're doing, we just did an art car in the art car parade here in Houston, the big 300 art cars ran it this year. We had a giant buckyball on the back of a gator, one of those athletic vehicles that you see come haul football players off the field, courtesy of our athletic department. We are doing a sandcastle buckyball at Galveston at the big sandcastle contest they have on June the 5th, I think it is, that Saturday. So that's something interesting. How do you make a buckyball out of sand? It'll be a very, very interesting day for us. And all of these activities, and many more that I haven't listed, are being underwritten by a major contributor to Nano at Rice. The Lockheed Martin Company has graciously been our key underwriter, given us a substantial donation to basically cover the fundamental costs of all the events we're doing. This is a fundraising year. We've not raised money at Rice for nanotechnology since 1993. When Rick Smalley started the first organized nano center in the world here, and the board and he and the development office raised $37 million to hire some faculty, build a building, endow his own chair so he wouldn't go running off out of state to some other university, and they were all recruiting him at the time. So we haven't raised money for nano since then, and we're launching a little mini campaign as part of the Rice Centennial campaign. Rice's 100th anniversary is 2 years from now. This is the first year of three leading up to that, and we're focusing on raising money to do more nano education, support faculty as they go out and look for major centers of research to be started, et cetera.
Wade, you've got a whole lot of stuff going on here in this this year of the Nano. Of course, the Tuna Fest is something you've been doing for a long time. I think you started out with just a few people attending that at one time, and it's grown, what, to 1,500 people at the last time? When's the last time you had the Tuna Fest?
Well, we skipped last year due to budget insufficiency, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
It was a combination of factors, but we decided not to do it last year, and boy, did we get a lot of complaints. Everybody misses the best party at Rice, so with the underwriting of the Lockheed Martin Company, we were able to go ahead and rebirth it. We're calling it Tuna's Back. So Tuna Fest is back, and as I said, July 2nd on at noon, we're doing it right here next to Space Science. It'll be crowded. It'll be hot. It'll be crazy. There's a live band. Rick Smalley's son, Chad Smalley, plays in a band called the Blackguards here.
Uh-huh.
We had them 2 years ago. They're a great band, and it's great to have some of Rick's legacy alive in music. So it is a very ambitious year. We're doing a lot of work. We have Dr. Valerie Moore, who's pretty much spending full time managing and orchestrating everything, and we're having a ball actually looking at all the events and looking at all the work ahead of us, but the fun we're going to have in doing it. It's going to be great to have the Nobel team back. Sean is involved, Sean O'Brien involved in the Dallas area in a startup company now. He's excited about coming back.
Uh-huh.
Jim Heath, of course, is very prominent in the field of nanotechnology himself. He's excited to come back.
Yeah, he's at UC Berkeley, I believe, isn't he, Jim?
Caltech.
Oh, I'm sorry, Caltech. Yes, of course, that's right.
And he's doing a lot of work in nanobiology, nanomedicine. He's working sort of systems biology, how nanotechnology is going to enable us to do exquisite diagnosis of many, many, many diseases way earlier than they do now. That's one of the things that Smalley was quite interested in, is using nanotechnology to revolutionize medicine. Jim is probably one of the most prominent people leading that charge now.
Uh-huh.
After Rick's passing, besides a few people here at Rice, and it's great to have him come back, and he'll give a bit of an update on the research he's doing sometime during that Monday-Tuesday event. The Monday morning event, by the way, is sort of a reminiscence of how it happened by the four remaining participants. So that'll be guided by the director of the Chemical Heritage Foundation,
mm-hmm.
Who's also underwriting that part of the activity as part of the Chow Foundation grant that they gave to the Chemical Heritage Foundation to have a symposium every fall at Rice on technology and innovation. And we had one last year. This year they've agreed to incorporate it into the celebration of the Buckyball. So we're leveraging the Chow family here, a prominent family in Houston, and their generosity through the Chemical Heritage Foundation, which is the recipient of many of Rick's original manuscripts and a lot of his early artifacts and so forth in the field of nanotechnology. So everything is falling into place beautifully. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be great to have eight of the prominent nanocarbon researchers in the world back here. Andrew Geim, very prominent in graphene now from Manchester.
Uh-huh.
Millie Dresselhaus from MIT. Andreas Hirsch, very prominent in buckyball chemistry from Germany. Morinobu Endo from Japan, very prominent especially in working nanotubes into things like lithium batteries. Donald Huffman, who's retired from Arizona, he was the guy that first figured out how to make buckyballs in large enough quantities to verify that they really exist. And he and Rick worked together during those first 5 years after the discovery of the buckyball to help prove that buckyballs were not just a blip on a screen, that they really did exist and they could be man-made, even though they also had been found in a number of other places in nature. Every time you burn a candle, you probably generate a few buckyballs.
Uh-huh.
So I think I've left several out, but you'll agree it's going to be a great symposium about where carbon nano is today and where it's going for the future.
Oh, absolutely. This has got to be a sensational celebration of the 25th anniversary and, of course, a nice update on what's going on with the field of nanotechnology. Now, there's a website that you say where we can RSVP, and that's rice.edu, is that it?
So the Smalley website is at smalley.rice.edu, smalley.rice.edu.
Okay.
The actual celebration is Buckyball, BUCKYBALL, .smalley.rice.edu. But if you go to smalley.rice.edu, there's a link to in the top left corner, top right corner, I think, of the Smalley website. Is a direct link to the Year of Nano and the activities.
Okay, and it's so good that Lockheed Martin is being such a heavy contributor this time. And of course, you're working closely with them. Are you still doing the Lancer program with Lockheed?
We're ending our second year, going on into the third with Lancer. We've had great success with it. There are about 8 funded projects that are going very well. Lockheed feels like they're getting a lot of bang for their buck. They're putting somewhere between $1 million and $1.5 million a year. Goes up and down a little bit depending on how the projects fluctuate. There have been patents filed already. They feel like that we're doing the basic research that's going to help them solve some of their stickiest problems in the field of aerospace. And Lockheed has expanded. They're not just an aerospace company anymore. They're expanding into energy. They're dabbling in bio. They're looking at environmental aspects. They're becoming a broader company. I think they may be vacillating over whether they're an information, meaning information among all technologies, or a broad technology company. So they're one of these companies, a bit, I guess, like GE has become an extremely diverse company, and Lockheed is likewise. And Lockheed sees great value not only in working with Rice for the research, but we produce some graduates that they're going to be very interested in hiring. Lockheed hires 5% of the engineers that graduate in the United States every year. So they have a big impact on the technical field by recruiting and giving good jobs, good high-paying jobs to engineers. They hire a few scientists too, but they're really well known for the ability to pick up some good people. And, of course, they're always interested in American citizens.
Yeah.
Do quite a bit of defense work, after all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, of course, they're just completing getting into service the F-35, which has been really very taxing for them, I understand. But tell us exactly, refresh us on what exactly Lancer is.
It's the Lockheed Martin Advanced Nanotechnology Center of Excellence at Rice, L-A-N-C-E-R. We love good acronyms here. So,
and what have you done so far? Where are you now with that program?
Well, like I said, we're sort of about finished with the second year of funding. It's a year to year thing. We get funding from the different business areas at Lockheed. So it's very much driven by how Lockheed perceives nanotechnology as solving their problems. Ray Johnson, the chief technology officer, an ex-Air Force guy, by the way, he has made a quote recently that nanotechnology is one of the most prominent aspects of the future of Lockheed. That's a pretty strong statement about nanotechnology.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he sees the need for Lockheed to stay at the cutting edge of what's happening in nano across a lot of areas because of Lockheed's technical diversity.
Can we drill down just a little bit, though, and tell us exactly what Lancer has accomplished so far?
Well, there are projects. Of course, we don't want to talk in detail about the projects. The work is publishable that Rice does, but it feeds into different devices and systems that Lockheed's working on.
Uh-huh.
But we've done several fundamental projects that are starting to pay off and involving nanotexturing of high performance battery materials. We've done work on nanotubes that are specifically tailored for detecting radiation at specified wavelengths with high efficiency. They've funded work on potential new ideas to go beyond photovoltaics for light absorption and conversion to energy that are not really acting like photovoltaics, but using some different principles there. We have had work on using almost single molecule detectors, designing what amounts to single electron transistors that can be very, very sensitive to detecting various forms of energy. Pretty interesting basic research. There's some work that would be categorized as nanophotonics. There's some terahertz radiation work going on. I think that's most of the active projects right now.
Well, I know Lockheed likes to keep a lid on the stuff that they're doing, so I understand why you can't talk in too much detail about all this stuff, but it is fascinating.
But you can see that it is sort of at the edge of the state of the art of what you can do with nanotechnology. And Lockheed has gotten smart about nano in part with our help, because we've given them a number of week-long short courses on campus here,
mm-hmm.
that have, in 1 week, drilling down fairly deeply into all aspects of physical nanotechnology. There's sort of biological or wet nano, as Rick would have called it, and dry nano, the physical nano, or silicon or other material-based nanotechnology that's not designed to intersect with the biological sphere. And so they've focused on the physical nano, and we've given them not only 4 repetitions of an hour of a week-long short course for probably 150, 160 people from Lockheed have been through that 1 week intense study. But we've also done deep dives, we call it 3-day intensive short courses, that will go deeper into, say, nanoelectronics or nanophotonics or nanomaterials. And so the people that have finished the first week course would come back a year later and have three days of much deeper study into one particular area of interest. So that has helped them educate more of their people about the opportunities for nano to solve problems. I mean, these are smart people working in very specialized fields, and they're basically unaware of how nano thinking can get you even more and better properties than you could by ordinary basic physics or chemistry.
Oh, Rice is very cool. I've known that now for a long time, Wade, and I can't tell you how much I really appreciate you being with us today. And we'll see you at the Tuna Fest July 2, and then October 10, and for a few days in the fall.
Absolutely. Be looking forward to it. See you there.
All right. Thanks, Wade, very much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I think the biggest single error in people not understanding the reason to change is that they fear that change to a new energy system will cost jobs. Now, I've done studies out here in California that shows that when you look at clean and green technology, that we will create on the order of 2 to 3 million jobs as we start to create a new energy economy. We could invest $1 trillion in wind, and heck, did we not just give $1 trillion to the banking system? How dumb was that? If we put $1 trillion into wind energy, we would have enough wind energy to make enough electricity to push all of our cars using motors and batteries, and we would never use petroleum. My name is Robert Cormia. I'm a faculty member at Foothill College in Los Altos Hills, California. I teach informatics and nanotechnology, and I work in energy policy and outreach in climate change.
So you decide, has this really been the Voice of Reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
Waiting for you.